When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 25. Well, I just want to throw out there, the next Nerdist Podcast Live will be July 28th at Largo in Los Angeles with special guest Fred Willard. Also just added, David Koechner. David Koechner of Anchorman. David Koechner of Thank You for Smoking. David Koechner of The Naked Trucker and T-Bones. David Koechner of Beer Shark Mice. So go to Nerdist.com right now and get tickets for that. Now, get tickets for your brain for free with the Nerdist Podcast number 25 with Maria Bamford. Most of that made sense.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Recording, we all sound okay? How do you sound up on that microphone there, Maria Bamford?
Okay.
How's that?
Do-do-do-do.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. All right, we're recording.
We did it. Podcast.
Maria Bamford!
Yay! Yay! Thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, Bamford. I've been wanting to get you on for a long time, and it's just been like tracking you down and scheduling.
Yeah.
You're a busy person. You got some shit going on.
Well, what happens is I get, you know, kind of overwhelmed. And then I don't wake up until noon. And that gives me like 2 hours of good time where I've got a cup of coffee. Then I fall back in again. Then I gotta go to the gym, right? And read my copy of Black Woman. And then, turns out, you know, we're all on the same page. We're just using different words to describe the same thing. And that sometimes things are hard and you just gotta let go and let God. No, I would want to translate that to something else. Let go and fall asleep. I think.
You listen to Des Reyes, "You Gotta Be" the whole time.
Oh yeah. Oh no, I haven't heard that tune.
Oh, it was like my mom's favorite song from like '93 when it came out. But it's just like, you know, it's a very, very good woman empowerment song. It's like, you gotta be cool, you gotta be something. All I know, love will save the day. Hey.
The lyrics of that song,
in the car and I have like an egg shaker in it.
The lyrics of that song sound like temp lyrics. We're like, yeah, love will save the day, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly. We actually record the song, we'll just fill it in with the actual lyrics. Yeah. We're like, wait, you didn't put the real, I thought you recorded the, and then they're stuck on that song.
People love it.
My mom had the single.
I miss Kasingles.
Yeah.
Why? What a cumbersome way to listen to music.
Right, fair enough.
Here's my favorite song. Hold on.
You're talking to the guy who put out a 7-inch comedy album.
Oh, do you have like?
Yeah, it was on a special thing.
That's delightful.
It's also on iTunes if anyone wants to get it.
Well, that sounded like an ad for your...
Jonah hasn't gotten a check in a while. People.
I haven't got it. Those $5 checks a month stopped a long time ago.
We are here to focus on Maria Bamford. Now, Bamford, I don't know, I'm not exactly sure when this is going up. It'll be sometime soon,
okay,
the podcast.
Okay.
But I did a show with you at the Improv last night.
Improv last night. First, there was Louis C.K. and he sold out the room, my friends. And he did a gorgeous. Didn't you think that was a beautiful set? I mean, it was.
Yeah, it's a. You know, Louis works in a different way than any of my other comedy pals. In that, I feel like a lot of people will. Or like you know, me. I don't speak for everybody. But I try to, like, to write as many things before I go on stage. And I'll fuck around with the crowd, but I don't just start riffing bits. But, you know, Louis is such a machine that he'll just kind of go up with some ideas. And he just finds the jokes. And when he, like, hits a vein of comedy, he just fucking punches it really hard and really mines it for as much as it's worth. And he's fascinating to watch.
It's great.
As a writer.
Yeah, I think also like it's watching him watching Paul F. Tompkins too, where it's like, you know, Paul could talk about something and you see him like on stage kind of putting it through the funniorizer. You know,
right.
It's like you see him working it and trying to figure out what it is. And it's always like Louis is always the same way. Remember like back in like early M-Bar days, like they would... They would go up every week and just like you'd
see it. Louis doesn't write anything down, or at least he didn't used to for a long time. Yeah. He would just kind of.
He doesn't?
No, he just said, no, he would just kind of work the beats out up on stage.
Oh my God.
But what was so great for me is because I also just did the Just for Laughs Chicago with you the week before.
Yeah.
But it's been so long since I've seen you do like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was. It was so great, Maria. It was so phenomenal.
Yeah, it's like, well, in LA, we only ever get to see, like how much time do you do at Tiger lately at most?
Yeah, you only do, like, 10, 7. Yeah. 7 if I'm not feeling so good about it.
And it's not a 20-person lineup at that
night. Yeah, yeah.
That's what's hard is because, you know, in LA or New York, you kind of get into these rhythms where you're only doing, like, 10 and 12-minute sets, and it's really hard to... You know, it's hard to build your hour by stitching a bunch of 10 minutes together because you really kind of want to find, like, the arcs of things and figure out where shit goes.
Right. That would be... Yeah, but then there's just disadvantage. Like, doing the road or whatever, I get used to... Now I get used to, like, you know, just that whole machismo element of the comedy club where it's like, people are like, yeah! And then, you know, the Improv or Bar Lubitsch and people are like, that was interesting.
I could see where someone would laugh out loud even to that very much. It's very funny.
No, I mean I've kind of seen Aziz Ansari do it. I'm better, but whatever.
Well, it's like
I have an audition tomorrow, though, so I'm not really in the comedy watching headspace right now.
I don't want to ruin my voice for my audition tomorrow. I don't want to ruin it by laughing.
Your mic
oh yes, so sorry. I'm a whispery.
And I'm a loud asshole, so I just I project very loud.
I know I mumble on stage, which is great. It's so helpful when you've worked a long time. I memorize my bits and I say them in front of the mirror over and over again, and same when I'm driving. I memorize the whole
thing.
But
your stuff is so your stuff is so flawlessly written and executed that, like, you're they're like vignettes. I mean, like, you're doing like a theater show almost, in my opinion.
Well, that's what I've tried to force on people. You know, like, no, there's no interaction. There's no group, you know, hurrah.
I saw you doing some crowd work last night, though.
I do try to talk to people. The Improv, I do get intimidated going up there because it's like, I don't know. After seeing Louis C.K. and stuff, I was just like, oh boy. But Compare and Despair, don't do that. Maria, we're all flowers in a beautiful garden. And the garden is growing.
The garden of comedy.
It's growing. It's a beautiful. I've seen, that's the delightful thing, is just seeing new people. I went down to have you been to the, I'm going to say it wrong, the Fuck You show, the You're Fucked show, the Fuck
Oh,
off show?
Holy Fuck.
Holy Fuck show.
Yeah, the Downtown Independent.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did that.
No,
once.
I haven't done that yet.
Oh, yeah. I think you might really enjoy it.
It's like a whole other scene.
Yeah.
It's like these kids have developed their own little show, and like they all know each other, and like they don't seem to, like, they're just their own little unit.
And people are really great.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody was really, really good. It's good. I mean, that's what I love about Los Angeles. It's really exciting. You see people who are very good and or very committed, you know, so even if they're like they're struggling, they keep hammering at it.
Yeah.
And people can like explode, you know, or whatever, like all of a sudden they're like super great, all of a sudden, you know, like remember. Yeah, yeah, just it's really neat. I like seeing.
I've always felt like LA was kind of a bummer place to start doing comedy, because you started in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, Minnesota.
LA is sort of hard because it's hard to find real audiences,
and you're starting in front of everybody,
in front of the business, and in front of, like, I always felt like it was so much more advantageous to kind of figure out what the thing you do and then kind of hone it here, like once you already kind of know.
Yeah.
But I mean, Minneapolis was just as, like, you know, people analyzing it and saying, you know, I worked as a pizza waitress, and then I would have people, you know, I'd be shucking a jab and trying to get people to come to my show, and then they'd come. And,
Then that happened.
You weren't supposed to actually follow through.
And then they'd come in and say, you know, I remember just one older lady coming in and just saying, I did not like what you did.
Are you serious?
That was... I used to do like an Andrew Dice Clay impersonation, and then it was sort of, it was filthy, and so but I thought, you know, that was a feminist statement, right? As well as you know, what is that called, showboating?
Yeah.
You know, where you I mean, you get to do the impersonation person, but then as well as benefit from their style,
from the jokes,
which is what they like.
Yeah. But then you also get to divorce yourself from them because you're doing a character, so you don't have to.
Totally, it's that hypocritical.
It's that level of separation.
Like, I do a comedian who, you know, like, or the thing where I wish I could do that kind of act where it'd be, you know, somebody saying, being sort of,
you're talking about the accessible. Ladies, we have a system.
Like a lady sing. But the truth is, I am actually using that style in order to get the same laughs that person
But you're
did,
getting
so.
Two different laughs.
Yeah,
you're
exactly.
getting the people
yeah.
who
yeah.
don't
yeah,
get
yeah,
the
yeah.
joke, and you're people yeah. you're getting the laughs of people who get the joke.
Yeah.
What would happen if you did that character and it became really famous, but you became successful for the non-ironic version of that character? Would it freak you out?
Larry the Cable Guy?
I think it just feels sad, because the same thing when people come up to the show and they're like, God, I didn't really get anything else, but that thing at the end, that was great, you know, yeah, that was fucking funny. And I go, oh, okay. But then I also feel good, because at least they laughed at one thing.
Right.
You know, so it does work both ways. Like, that it is funny. I mean, what that act is saying is funny, and that that's a way to do stuff, too. I do things out of jealousy and low self-esteem sometimes.
And, don't we all?
Yes, of course. Yes.
That's how I walk.
May I take this glass with
like,
me?
Maybe you might start a podcast because you feel like you don't have enough control over your career. Por ejemplo. But I've known you for like 10 or 11 years.
Yeah.
And we used to do these little shows in Westwood, California.
Yes.
And but your comedy career goes back even farther. But you started... I don't think I've ever seen video of it, but you started with the violin.
And that was just if it didn't go well, at least they'd go, wow, she's a great violin. It was all about my ego, like going, oh, well, she's great at violin.
So what was your, when you first started, like, first of all, how did you kind of get, and a lot of people listening might already know these stories, but I just, for people who don't, how did you get into performing, and what kind of motivated you to do this kind of performance pieces?
Well, in retrospect, I realize it's all a vengeful act, you know, to prove that I am a worthwhile, regular person, that other people like me, even though, you know, my family was on the fence sometimes. So let's start with that. And then and then perhaps, you know, part of myself that's like, I don't know if this is any good. And then, you know, you get... You know, because applause and stuff is like, oh, I'm okay. You know, I'm an okay person now. But then when the applause stops again, it's an endless cycle. But I always enjoyed before. I always like looked forward to doing speeches. Like when you got to do a little speech in grade school. Oh, I just loved it. It was so great.
Did you do a lot of character stuff in the speeches, or were you?
I remember doing some story where I made up a story about like a couple of tomatoes, and like one tomato was like a New York tomato, and I did that in my fifth grade pod system. We had in the 70s they had where all the classrooms are open,
yeah.
and you just go free form
yep.
from one thing to another,
yep.
and I don't know if I remember this clearly, but I do remember like thinking that the other classes stopped what they were doing to listen to me. I don't know if that was a fantasy.
What was sort of the what in kind of
What was your inspiration when you were a kid? Like, what kind of comedy did you... Did you watch comedy with your parents?
No, my dad... We'd always stay up and watch Saturday Night Live with my dad. Mm-hmm. My dad would love Saturday Night Live. We'd do all those jokes, you know, to ourselves over and over again. And that's... I totally... Like, that's one of my best memories. And also the thing that's also the same is laughing with my family, you know? Just, like, making my sister laugh. My sister is ridiculously funny. She is not on her... She has... My sister has a vlog. We're all closer to being... constantly everything is being televised, so you won't be able to tell where the revolution is. but is this revolting? Oh, I don't know what's on the other channel. And but she's really funny, and my dad and my mom, and so I was, you know, have a lot of warm time.
And are they cool with all the characterizations of them that pop up in your set?
Pretty much. My sister and I think it's been harder because my sister, when I've kind of made her like sort of a cruel persona, which she has been, like she's been kind of snarky, but now she has, she's changed really as a person. You know, she's gone through sort of a metamorphosis.
Well, that's not funny though.
Yeah, exactly. And I try to goad her.
Her being a nice, normal person is hardly comedy fodder.
I know. She's so supportive now. She won't budge. So now, yeah, I'm having to rewrite some material of, like, how maybe I'm the asshole. You know, how I'm the asshole. So that's sort of different. But I think that was hard for her, you know, to hear me kind of making her as sort of this snarky person, because she lives in it's a small town, Duluth is. So, I mean, and I think I'm the only thing besides Bob Dylan that gets reported about. So it's like, you know, people got back to her and were like, Sarah, have you seen your sister's impersonation? And she's like, no, what is it? You know, so, but that was hard. I remember one time I did a motorcycle rally. performing. It was a Minnesota motorcycle rally, so everyone was very quiet. You know, nobody was... we were just camping. We're just camping, and we like to ride motorcycles. And so it wasn't as frightening as that sounds, but I had my dad open for me. I paid him $300.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
He did 10 minutes up front, and it was... I mean, he bombed, but it was... And you don't really bomb in Minnesota because everybody's just sort of politely listening, like...
That's a great way to get back at your parents.
Yeah.
Make them do comedy.
Here's a mic. Get up there.
Yeah.
He was so great, though. He rehearsed it over and over again, and he did a joke about me, which was total payback. It was like... He goes... Okay, what do you think history? Okay, so I asked my daughter to pick me up at the airport, and she said, I'm busy, I can't answer my daughter, Maria, I can't. I said, Dad, when did you ask me to pick up your airport? He says, it has to be true. And I was like, good point, my friend. Good point.
I see the Bamfords as the new reality show.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the Maria Bamford show was, the Super Deluxe web show you did. It was just like, it's just her, you doing all your different family members, right?
My family members. I like doing that. It's fun.
Well, Bamford and I worked on Barnyard together.
Oh, that's right.
We did the back of the Barnyard for Nickelodeon, and Bamford played the meddling next door neighbor, Mrs. Beatty. And they would always... What was so great about working on Barnyard is that we would do written passes of the script, but then they would just have us improvise. And they used a lot of the stuff we improvised, and particularly with Maria, they would just let her go like as far as she wanted to go. And so that character just ended up becoming so wonderfully insane. And it was you know, like almost entirely Maria just coming in and kind of like taking what could have been a pretty like stereotypical like I'm a nosy neighbor and just making this woman like a basket of insanity. It was so fucking gorgeous.
You should name your next album.
Yes,
Basket of Insanity. Basket
or So
insanity.
Fucking Gorgeous.
So fucking gorgeous. One of those things.
Are you working on a new album?
Yeah, I'm always working. I'm trying to work out new material. I mean,
It takes what it takes. I think Jennifer Aniston said that once.
You know, it's so true, Maria.
Right, Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
So true.
I was like, I was, I was going to try to do a joke, you know, how I'm obsessed with celebrities. You know, they're just like us, except that their moods create weather. and like how, because I read this book about how people go for celebrity because it's a survival technique of biology that you want to look towards the person you perceive as being like the most fertile, physically strongest, whatever person.
Well, Jen was not very fertile until recently. Am I right, you guys?
No.
According to Us Magazine.
Is she preggers?
That's what it says on the newsstand.
Baby bump watch?
Baby bump watch.
No, I think her actual quote was, "My pussy is full." Which I was surprised they put that on us. But,
Jessica's, oh.
My pussy's not hungry anymore, it's full of baby, I think was the actual
goal. Then there was
one of the most disgusting ways to talk about pregnancy and birth. It's like, out of anyone I know, Chris has just like tons of horrible ways to say, like, what was it, like front poop?
Oh, that's, yeah.
Front poop.
Yeah.
Or poop out of my front butt.
Yeah, yeah. I think on WebSoup we said front poop out of human or something. Yeah. I don't know. It's
great. It's a
little... That was always, you know, I always wanted to be the class clown, and I was always the kid that would say stuff like, you know, my pussy is full of baby in school, and none of the kids ever thought it was funny. It was just like a fucking momentum killer and just a dude. Like I got that reaction a lot. It was never. Haha, you are entertaining.
Yeah, I didn't. I wasn't really a class clown either. I was because you got to, if you're a lady, you got to be kind of quiet and giggly. You know, people like it when my dad said, if you want a guy to like you, just listen. Just listen to them, for God's sake.
Something going on in your marriage, Joel?
I love, you know, you're one of the only people that I've ever seen get away with dropping the C word.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it, when you're married, is a bit about her mom, her parents heckling her.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And
my mom heckles me and says, shut the fuck up, you stupid cunt, before I snap your neck in half.
And there's usually, you feel a chill, like, ripple through the room when someone drops a C word. But last night, it was on fire, Maria Van Vliet.
It was all right. And, that's actually something Brian Posehn said to me. And he said, shut the fuck up, you stupid. It was like in a morning, like getting into the van. I'm like,
Oh, yeah.
Good morning to you, sir.
What was that experience like for Comedians of Comedy, where it's you and three, like, very specific but kind of, you know, dominant male personalities?
It was super exciting because I've never had brothers, and I'd also, like, I have not always had the best social skills, so I would always just escape. Like after doing an open mic, I would always usually go home pretty frequently, or, like, I just didn't have a lot of anxiety, so I was like, now I'm getting better at it.
Being with people, we're okay, aren't we?
Yeah.
Ever, I feel safe. Especially when being recorded. As long as everything's recorded.
That's what makes it all worth it.
It was really nice. It was nice to kind of like and see that they, you know, they're sensitive dudes too. You know, like everybody has sometimes I always thought that, you know, men are different or something, but they had, you know, they were worried about stuff and had
feelings come up and
all that stuff. It was real nice, and they were very supportive, you know, and that's also, I think that's also like, I think, oh, somebody, yeah, had a lot of prejudices, you know, thinking, oh, well, if somebody's you said shut the fuck up, you stupid cunt, before I snap your neck in half,
right.
Like somehow, like, he's, like, really a cruel dude. And he's like, no, yeah. I don't like you. I wrote a tag for your joke. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it was like being welcomed into the fold, because that's exactly what he would say to Patton every morning.
Kind of like gang jumping by nerdy comics.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know.
He called me a cunt.
Yes, no.
What was it like traveling with Zach? Because I've known Zach about the same amount of time as I've known you, and Zach, it's... I love him to death. I don't know if I've ever had a serious conversation with him, because when you try to have a serious conversation with him, he kind of deflects it, and then I'm like, I don't think I really know you.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't super know him very well, but I mean, he seems like a good guy. I mean, I could see that he's kind of get to some weird, like, celebrity factor, where, or you're, or, like, just, like, I would think maybe he... like maybe be stressful to like connect with too many people.
Oh yeah, well, especially now because he's super famous.
Yeah, the only long conversations I've ever had with him have been about music. That's like not, like, but once it delves into like, you know, like growing up, like listen to other bands, like that's when it exactly, you know, like it deflects and it goes into something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Boy, I had some really crazy drunk moments with that guy.
Oh, at his house.
At his house in England.
Right.
Yeah. Like we, like just being in other places. I called a cab one night. This was the same night that I asked Marc Maron, because Marc Maron had been sober a couple years at this point. This was like in 2003. It was July 4th. Actually, July 4th of 2003.
Was it at the house in Venice?
Yeah. Yeah, it was the house in Venice. And I was hammered, and I went to Marc Maron. I was like, so you're sober, right? What's that shit like? And then I called the cab and fell asleep on the floor. And then Zach had to wake me up and be like, your cab's here. I'm like, who's the cab now? Like, I didn't know where I was. Just a puddle of drool. Those were the good old days.
There was a bouncy castle in the back. It was a pretty fun party.
Oh, I don't know. I just remember Nick Swartz and shooting bottle rockets at people. It was a weird,
party. That was crazy.
Are you on the sober train or?
I'm not on the sober train. I booze it up sometimes, but not. I don't drink that much because I'm on so much medication. Like I get sleepy real quick. You know, so it's like it's not super fun for me. Like my friend was like, let's go wine tasting. And I'm more of a food person. Like, I do like delicious foods and, you know, and also caffeine. I can totally relate with Marc Maron on that. Like, he's always cranked up on coffee. Like,
he loves
I am
his coffee.
Jacked. And I'm trying to get off that. I've tried to get off that stuff.
Drink of choice? What do you like?
Oh, well, I used to be just a did cokehead, and then I dated somebody who was totally an iced coffee, and I was like, what? And that is a sweet high. Like, the iced coffee, it's like, oh my god, it's like you're flying. You have all so many ideas coming in your head.
It's like when Troy McClure gives Selma the cigar.
Yeah.
It's like smoking 10 cigarettes at once.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to get off that, because I don't know, like, I mean, the philosophy that I seem to adhere to is that whole idea of like, well, why are you doing this? Like, is it kind of covering up some sort of feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, ah, god damn it. You know, and I go, I don't know if I, like, I get scared, like, whatever's, you know, caffeine is covering up, that'll be something like, you're going to have to move from Los Angeles and train to become an EMT. Because that's what you're meant to do, is to help people in emergency situations, even though you get really anxious in those situations and probably don't command a lot of confidence in people because of your high voice and your jittery hands. But
so you might just get that flash of a thought.
Like, yeah, like that. And I worry that it will mean that that somehow, because I bought a house and all of a sudden I realized, like they always say, or not they always say, but I thought, the American dream is you buy a house and then you feel like great, like you kind of feel a part of everything. And in fact, it has been super lonely to like live in a house when you're by yourself. And then I just got a roommate. So
oh, you did?
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Where'd you find?
She's
where'd you get your roommate?
Nice. Craigslist.
Oh.
Her name's Jasmine. Hi, Jasbo.
Oh, I met Jasmine. She was at the show last night.
Yeah.
She was nice.
Super nice. She's like 19. She's an artist. She's super cool. She already got herself on some YouTube stars video that they're shooting in Sherman Oaks. And anyway, so it's been super, super good, but and kind of like that weird thing of like everything I've ever wanted has happened, you know, like I'm done,
yeah.
You know, like I don't really, there's just nothing really need I've, you know, to strive for it. It's like, oh, so, you know, I make enough money. It's like, okay, I know these are champagne problems.
Do they come from caviar dreams?
Yes, they do.
Caviar nightmares.
Oh, caviar nightmares.
Sometimes diamonds, they kind of scratch you.
Oh my god, complain bragging. I love it. I'll sit and have complain bragging sessions with people just for the fucking fun of it. Yeah, it's like, you know, what they don't tell you when you buy the new Audi is that the keyless entry system, you know, you have to be within 15 feet of the car. It's like, maybe I want to be 20 feet from the car, Germany.
I hear you. Hey,
fucking
Matt.
Ridiculous.
Hey, Matt, how's your Honda doing?
What?
It's a hybrid.
Hybrid. How's
so
that?
It's female and it can't reproduce. Come on, biology jokes.
Yeah. No, nature finds a way. I don't know if you remember the chaos theory.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nature finds a way.
There's frog DNA in my Honda Civic.
I also play jazz, and here's an iMac.
Yes. Hey, so how did you feel after getting your brand new car? Like, did you feel considerably different?
Well, I was dating a girl in Santa Monica, and I was driving a six-cylinder Jeep back and forth.
Might as well be Wyoming.
Exactly.
I know,
exactly.
If you live in LA, you understand that joke.
What's funny is I got rid of the Jeep because it got 12 miles to the gallon, and then I got the Civic Hybrid and then immediately broke up with her in the Hybrid. And I felt great about it.
Okay. So it was a very breakup.
But then I was sad because I didn't have the Jeep anymore because I'm driving like 4 miles a day back and forth to work. And but you know what? I'm used to it.
Okay.
But it gets great mileage. I can drive to Vegas and back on a tank.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. But yeah, so it didn't change your all over mood or like feelings about
life. I felt better about not recycling bottles.
Oh, okay.
That's interesting. So there's there's a sort of weird, there's a sort of kind of weird carbon footprint economy that you go, you're like, well, I'm contributing in this way.
So it's like when I'm at Whole Foods and I finish, I'm like, you know what? This is going in the trash.
It's like you're walking down the neighborhood and you just fucking kick a puppy and you're like, hybrid.
Sorry.
Wait, my friend just said something like that. Because I don't have kids, like, that's doing something for the environment. Like, I can take credit for that. Like, I'm not increasing the population. I was like,
sounds like you just don't want to have kids.
Yeah.
Do you are you seeing anyone right now?
No, I'm dating on a number of different facilities. Although I know that that's not the best way to meet people. They say the best way to meet, you know, it's just through. But so I've joined a volleyball group because I enjoy volleyball.
Do you really?
Yes, I do. I do. Bump.
Sign out.
Spike.
Bump. Spike. She knows all the terminology.
Yeah. I don't even know what sign out means. Was that means I get to?
It was a movie. I don't know. It was a movie with Peter Horton and C. Thomas Howe. It was a volleyball movie. From the 80s, I think.
Yeah, every sport had a movie in the 80s.
Yeah.
Also, see Thomas Howell's.
Yes.
But just say this, please don't anyone Facebook me about wanting to go on a date unless they live within 5 miles of Los Angeles. And I also won't go out with anybody, because I went on a date with somebody from Facebook who actually knew through friends through high school, and it was so terrifying. I cannot even, like, it turned out, like, it was really, it was like, oh, this is why people don't give up the numbers, meet people in private places, because you really don't know. Like, somebody can have, like, all the, like, this person is a, you know, has a reputable business, and lives in a wonderful home, and are drinking at night by themselves.
Right.
Which I'm a cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, I'm totally, but, you know, you just go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that, you know, you do have to be careful, because I always thought, oh, so
I can't believe that Jack Rapington turned out to be a psychotic individual.
Oh.
You know, Aaron Foley and I were sitting in the back of who is also a wonderful comic.
Hello, so good.
And I watched, I had to pee about halfway through your set, but I didn't want to leave. So I watched, I stayed, I held it in.
Yeah.
And Foley and I were just talking about how, like, your stuff is amazing on so many different levels, and I love the idea that I can see the sort of self-help stuff that I'm sure. I mean, like, I know I've read a bunch of that stuff too, and I see it bleeding out. And so on the face of it, it's funny. Like, the shit that you're writing is very funny on the surface, but I love kind of looking at what's underneath. Like, God damn it, she must have been through like 15 of hearing that same kind of phrase over and over again about how you gotta love yourself and you gotta let people in, you know, before that expressed itself in your comedy.
Oh, I love self-help. I'm a total self-help nerd. I love reading about ways to how life should be lived in a series of boxes. And if you just do a short inventory of your, what are your strong points and your negative points, and why don't you put that on a graph and then put it through a computer, and then it comes back to you and you get a badge and you wear that. And, you know, like...
Maria, pretend your life is a file cabinet. Yeah, you're given 43 folders, and each folder is an emotion that you can file away.
It's Linux. I know this system.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That is totally... Yeah.
Someone should write a Unix philosophy self-help book. Like, self-help book through Unix philosophy.
Oh, that would be...
That would sell at least 5 copies.
I mean, I'll read anything. Like,
the guy in the office is the processor, and the filing cabinet's your hard drive. Sorry.
I do like autobiographies. Like, did you read, Andre Agassi's?
No.
Oh my god. It was awesome. It's beautifully written, but it's all about, like, the passion of doing something and being super passionate and working super hard at it. But he says he hated it. He hated tennis the whole time, like, he was pushed to do it as a kid, and it was just I don't know. I think it was a really beautiful book, and I love to read. I mean, I love to read. Period. I love to read.
Okay. I'm a reader.
What are you guys reading? Are you guys reading anything good?
I'm reading Craig Ferguson's book right now.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, yeah. The American on Purpose. It's great.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's awesome. We had him on recently on the podcast, and like, I was just like, this guy's awesome, and just I wanted to know more about like his upbringing and like because like you know he's. Like you said, like he started like in punk bands and then went on to like do comedy.
Yeah.
Like it's like I had the same thing where it's like I was in punk bands growing up and then like I just stopped being in bands, started doing comedy.
Right.
And like it's a great book, really good and really really good read.
That's awesome.
But you have to have the Craig Ferguson voice in your head while you're reading it because it makes it that much funnier.
That's the same thing with the Groucho Marx autobiography.
Oh really?
You have to have Groucho in your head when you're.
I read Business Trip Bear, the Richard Branson one, but now. You know, it's hard for me to read. It's hard for me to read fiction. I always tend to read nonfiction because I want to learn about people's processes.
No, me too.
And I always feel like, I feel like it's a waste of you know, like I could be learning something.
Yeah.
But the girl who I just took on a bunch of contributors for the Nerdist site, and this girl who writes book reviews just wrote about a book called Ancestor by a guy named Scott Sigler, and she says it was amazing. So I'll probably read that.
Okay.
But I never read fiction stuff.
I know. Yeah, I'm not a super fiction. I just go, it didn't happen. Who cares?
Yeah.
If I just made that stuff up.
Well, yeah, yeah.
If I read fiction, it's like a comic book or a graphic novel. But like never, it's never like if it's a book, I just read.
Like I love Chuck Klosterman. I've never read his novel, Downtown Owl. I always read his nonfiction stuff. I just can't. It's like a waste of a book. I'm like, why didn't you just.
Murray Bamford, what would your autobiography be like?
I read Kathy Griffin's and Sarah Silverman's, mm-hmm. and those are both just so awesome and great. And I read all of Chelsea Handler's books,
uh-huh.
which are, I mean, she's great too. It's just so awesome because it just seems like, I mean, yeah, she's very, it's like feminist in that she did, you know, she doesn't apologize for just like loving sex. Like she's just like, and she's just like, yeah, so this, I did it then, and then I did it again, and then I did it with this person. You know, I mean, that was probably my focus of the book. I'm sure she said some other things on there. But let me see. I have a book that I started working on, which I thought, because I thought about, like I've read tons of books about depression and anxiety and stuff like that. So I thought, you know, one where it'd be funny. Like it'd be a funny book, but maybe that already exists. So I did start working on that, and that's called "Don't Be Afraid of the Dark."
Even if it does exist, it does not exist in your voice, which is why I think you should do it. Do you? Because I mean, I have a history of, you know, anxiety, and what the interesting thing was, stand up. No matter how anxious I could be going to a show, I always felt better once I got on stage. Like it was the weirdest. Kind of opposite the way it normally works for people. Like, it always took me out of the anxiety space to performing.
Yeah, it's totally relaxing. Like, I there's no way you can think about anything else on stage.
You can't focus on yourself and be hyper-aware and...
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You just have to be.
You just kind of got to be. Well, you know, it sounds corny, but that's true.
I said it jokingly, but that's exactly
Yeah, but you're holding two ears of corn in your hands when you said it, and you were dancing around.
And comically. I put my B-shirt on.
We just say, you got to be strong.
Yeah, what?
You got to be strong.
Sometimes on a Friday night, I like to wear my B-shirt and get my B-shirt on.
damn.
Do you, this is something that I've been thinking about. It's weird. What do you think about, the idea of, preaching to the choir, performing for your own crowd, whether, I was talking to Al Madrigal, and he performs all sorts of, you know, and I just go, God, I would like to be that comedian, you know, performs all different sorts of rooms, like, anywhere, you know, anytime, and I just get so, first of all, I just feel bad for the people who I'm performing for. I just go, I'm sorry, because you aren't going to enjoy this until I get the hang of it. So
we've talked before, and you said that it sometimes gets rough on the road, you know, if you get a super mainstreamy audience that doesn't really get what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I feel really bad about it, but maybe I should eat more protein. that seems to be an issue. I went up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and I was just... Oh, it's just a rough week where it was a lovely club where it's like a, you know, sort of a community, totally, you know, it's packed every night, but they weren't necessarily knew what they're going to see. It was just sort of like, we all come down because it's, you know, so-and-so's retiring and this is where everybody goes in Erie. And so I let them down. I let those people down. But I also had malted milk balls for dinner, and then Jackie's like, get her some chicken wings! Get her some chicken wings!
Oh, yes, Jackie Cation.
She's a delight to be with,
but
too.
I don't feel like you have to, you know, I mean, obviously there are exceptions to every rule, but I feel like people who try to speak to everyone end up talking to nobody. You know, like, I feel like the people who love what you do are across the board super smart, introspective, thinking people.
Right.
And I think that's a great audience to have. I don't think there's anything wrong with finding your audience and performing for them. I mean, that's ultimately kind of what
you're... Well, it's like the kind of music a band plays. Like, you know, the people who like that kind of music are going to watch that band.
Like the Dave Matthews Band. That's exactly what we're talking about.
I'm the king of the castle. I deserve to bless the rush into me.
I love that
even your impression.
Well, they got violins. So you like
it.
It's really more of a fiddle, Jonah.
It's a fiddle?
It's really more of a fiddle.
I get to sit in the same green room with those guys because Australia, they don't have any hierarchy of who's supposed to be in the green room. And so I got to hang out with all the other superstars with who's the new Skywalker?
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, with him, and we all sat in the same green room.
You're better than him.
Yeah.
I think I'm gonna say you're better than him.
He was
lucky to be in the room with you.
Yeah.
Not that Jumper wasn't a fine movie.
That must have been 2004. What year
was
that?
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah, 2004. Yeah.
How was it in Australia, performing in Australia?
Oh, it was fun. It was great. It was great, but it's too far, and...
it's too far.
It's too far and too... You know, it's just like, again, it's like, unless Jackie came for the first 2 weeks, and that was awesome, and then I just got to convince people to go with me, mm-hmm. which seems to be an issue now. You know, like, I'll go, because a lot of my friends have kids, or... You know, businesses, and they're just like...
Well, the ones who aren't being responsible for the environment have kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have a 19-year-old roommate who'd probably love to go to Australia with
But him. Would I be somehow lowering the carbon footprint? I could take more airplane rides if I was a foster parent.
Oh. Interesting. What is going through your head when you start... Because, you know, I feel like, you know, we all kind of have these algorithms in our head as comics where... When you start doing your act and you go, oh, if they didn't respond to that, they're probably not going to go for the next 10 minutes of stuff. Like, where does your head go, you know, when you're kind of starting and you're like, I don't think they're that into this.
I kind of try to go to, well, Jackie calls it going to the vault, where it's like, which I feel like I watched Louis C.K. where I went on tour with him a couple times and he would just go and do his new stuff, like, no matter what. I mean, he does have a really strong personality.
Very strong personality, yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I just try to do as many new ones, and then when they seem like they're, like, irritated, then I go, oh, well, here's this one. And I know you'll like
it. So it was a soft, underhanded pitch for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's your writing process like?
I talk to myself in the car, like, on the way here, there's this phenomenon where I get picked up by a cab driver sometimes, and this is not an all-encompassing statement, but sometimes cab drivers are recently emigrated from a country where if they were to see me in their country, I could probably be stoned or thrown acid in my face or raped with a fence post. And that affects the customer service, let me tell you. Because I've just had really bad experiences where they'll, like, one guy started yelling at me, took me off the street and, like, to a side road, started yelling at me because it wasn't going far enough for him for a fare. One guy wouldn't let me roll the windows down. One guy, you know, yelled at me for a long time, you know, about how I was using a credit card. And I said, has credit cards anything? And it was all seemed to be about, like, women are inferior. Why is the goat talking?
Oh, right, you know, right, like, right. So you're saying that there's some sort of a regional thing about where these gentlemen... from where they hail, where you're a woman and you're getting in the cab and you should fucking shut up and do what they say.
It's kind of hillbilly. I mean, whatever it is, it's hillbilly, you know, where it's like, just, the first question is all, and I'm sure women, you know, you get is, are you married? I mean, I've heard that, like,
are you serious?
That's the first question. A lot of cab drivers is, are you married? And what that means is, are you a whore?
Oh my gosh.
Are you not? Jeez. And then I say, yes, I am. He is a Marine as well as a mercenary. And you know what? His name is Knife. He's a sharp knife. Sometimes I call him Gun when we're just joking around. But And then I joke about, like, sometimes I've said, I've gotten sort of mad and said, they, you know, they'll say, oh, yeah, made it, okay. And it isn't one ethnicity. I think it's like, it's a sort of a, you know, I don't know what it is. It's just sort of like a thing that women should be out and about. Yeah, it's cab drivers, fucking cab drivers. You know, and I'm wearing something sleeveless, and that is asking for it.
Hey, what are you showing your forearms for, you slut?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of wonder it, because it's like a, then I, what I do is I'll say, oh, will you hold on? And I'll say, oh, I'm a comedian, and then they go through a whole, you know, things of like, oh, you've seen everything. So then they take out their cell phone and show, you know, pictures of Tiger Woods dancing to "I Like Pussy," funny, or reiterating Eddie Murphy's act from 1985 of, you know, faggots, how they put their dick in a hole. You think about the faggots is so fucking funny. You've seen everything, though. I mean, I want to see everything, my friend. And
yeah, what are you going to answer when they go, what do you do? DEA.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good
just
idea.
Tell me you work for the government.
Yeah.
Tell me you fucking work for the government and they will not bother you.
Yeah, that. Well, I mean, that's true. Now I say I'm a bookkeeper.
No, that's too obvious.
Oh, okay.
DEA is like fucking hardcore enough, and it's a weird thing to say. I think INS would be the one that they'd be like, ah, you're fucking with me.
But
DEA, I feel like, is specific enough.
Yeah, DEA will have a gun.
Glad we worked this out, guys.
And I don't think it is, because I'm sure there are white Americans who would be kind of the same way, like, you know, that same sort of thing of like, why is a woman out traveling by herself?
What you need to do is get yourself a gun, a badge, decapitate one, hang his head from your purse. Then no one's gonna say anything when you get in their car.
Exactly.
Then that's the problem. What? Who's married what now? Who's married to whom now? And you can just kind of indicate to the head.
Chris Hardwick, problem solver.
That's right. I'm just a guy that feels like decapitation solves everything.
Sure, my answers will get you arrested, but they're answers. Who else has got one?
Hey. You guys aren't chipping in.
So I was trying to write a joke about that, you know, about like saying, you know, like what... And the hilarious thing is that I never say, like, because I had some friends I was talking about, and they're like, oh, yeah, just, because the friend had a similar experience, she was just like, I told them, you know, fuck off, and you're not going to get a tip or whatever, and I'm going to call it a taxi agency. Of course, what I do is I go, I over-tip them, and then I'm really nice because I think... I feel, part of me is I'm afraid of them.
Right.
And then part of me sort of like feel sorry for them, like, oh, well, I just, you know, maybe they're going to learn about the country and there's a new experience for them. And
the apologist for the asshole.
Yeah. So.
He's really nice when you get to know him.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's totally like, well, why did I, you know, why do you stay in a relationship with someone who yells at you all the time? Like, oh, he's right.
I tremble a lot when he's yelling at me. That's true. It's me.
I'm such a dummy the way my face looks.
You know, I mean, not to, this doesn't make it weird, you might be my favorite comedian.
Oh, that's very kind.
I mean, like genuinely, but one of my favorite thing about your material is that it is unstealable. Oh, there is no fucking way.
He's tried.
Yeah.
I mean, all ideas, we all have the same ideas. We're all having generally the same experience, you know? So it's like, I always think, even if you have the exact same idea, because I had somebody, we had the same idea, a young lady who had a hilarious idea that I had as well, about how, you know, I'm in an abusive relationship, but it was with myself. I know I seem charming when we're together, but, you know, when it's just me, sometimes all of a sudden, I can't predict it, I'll just start yelling at myself, why don't you go to the gym and have a baby? And, you know, and you just think, well... You know, like, then you just develop the shit out of it until it is unrecognizable from anybody else, you know? Like,
that's what I want to know about you, is how you... A lot of this you work out kind of in the car. Do you ever sit down to write?
Yeah, I sit down, and I'll tell... Me and Jackie will do, like, a joke. We'll go, okay, I'm doing... And we'll not... We'll ask for tags or not. I'd say, I don't want any feedback on this. I'm just saying it aloud, you know, because that's hard when somebody like gives feedback, but it's like it's a fresh baby, you know, and I can't read yet, And
right when the baby comes out of the womb. Yeah. Oh, oh! You gonna fix that?
Yeah.
It's only 2 minutes old.
Is this already full gone?
Put some clothes on that. You probably want to cut that cord off the middle. Well, but it's gonna happen.
Exactly.
Just gonna give it a little bit of time.
So wait, it's gonna look like that forever.
No, it's gonna grow into a person.
I'm not seeing that happen in front of my eyes.
I don't think so.
I mean, I guess you could. I just would shelve it. I mean, I just, people might not like
it. First impressions last a lifetime.
My mom will say, like, sometimes I can't tell my parents jokes, but my mom said, oh, that needs a lot of work. Like that premise or whatever. My dad, I don't know if I have a dad who's like a workaholic. He'll be up from like 4 a.m. to like 7 p.m. Like working at a job, but then also at home at night. He'll bring home stuff. And
what's he do?
It's an unhappy. But he loves to work, but I think he's a dermatologist, but he also does studies on the side and does all sorts of, it's a little less now that he's getting older, I've been trying to write a joke about that, about like, but it seems sad now. It's a little too sad. Like people kind of go, oh, but I'm trying to work on that. Like saying, my dad, is always, give me a hard time about my work ethic. Ooh, are you going down for a nap or just coming up from a nap? Ooh, no, were you taking a break from your vacation? Dad, I'm traveling. Oh, sure, you're on sabbatical. Dad, I get it. You sat around bars for years, eating French fries with your friends, and now you found a way to get paid for it. Dad, I don't want to talk to you. Oh, you're going to hang up on your poppy. You don't want to talk to her there. No, I'll talk to you. Yeah, what else are you going to do? But I've told that joke, and some people like get a little bit sad, Like it's like the jokes transform of like, oh, where it's like, oh, okay, when you start with the initial emotion, and it's like, oh, I sound too mad, or it sounds too sad, or something like that. Because when I was telling that before, it was like, my friend's like, okay, the way I was telling it before wasn't any good, but I like how jokes develop, it's fun.
Do you ever riff tags on stage, or do you go up like, totally, exactly what's gonna come out?
I know pretty much, but sometimes, I wish I would let myself be more surprised, to like trust
in the moment, in the universe, in the wind blowing in the trees. It affects us all.
Are you working on any jokes?
Yeah, more so now than I have in a while, but like, I don't write well when I just sit down and write. I write the worst things I could ever do if I just sit down and write. So I have ideas and then I take them on stage and then play with them.
Okay. Yeah.
I had this conversation with Steve Odekirk, who was creator of Barnyard.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Right.
And
right.
Steve was saying he thinks it's important to sit down and write those shitty parts because he thinks it loosens up the machine.
Yeah.
For you to get to this stuff, so that later on you'll have an idea in your car. But that was probably shaken loose because you actually did sit down and force yourself to write no matter how bad it was.
And there's a weird thing, too. Like, I actually found one of my old notebooks, and I was going through it, and some of the stuff I know I tried and would, like, crash and burn, but, like, seeing it now with, years of experience.
You weren't ready for it yet.
I wasn't ready for it yet. So seeing stuff now, I'm like, oh, wait, no, I think I can figure this one out now.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that? Do you ever go back to the old books?
Yeah, I'll go through and dig through a lot. I mean, a lot of it's really painful where you're like, oh, my God, every once in a while you'll see, I think it's really important to dig through the old stuff.
See, I throw away all my notebooks as soon as they're filled.
Are you serious?
I throw them all away.
Wow.
Do you really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. I have a box of old notebooks. You just throw them away. Why?
I throw them away because I don't know. I throw stuff away. I know, I was thinking about it myself because I know it would be interesting to look back.
Well, it's neat, too, because, with other experiences in your life, you end up looking at something that you wrote down when you had one angle at it. Now you have two or three different, views.
It's sort of a weird psychotic diary.
Yeah, really.
Just, to see what your brain was trying to, express at the time.
Yeah. It is good. I don't like clutter. I don't like stuff sitting around, that's good. I like that, what happens when you're working something out on stage and, you just totally lose, because that is my fear. At least I feel like if I have something planned out, even if people are on board, it's like, well, I have a plan, and I did a nice plan, and they can see that I baked these cookies, and they're made of shit, but they look like cookies.
If I you know go into a turn down a dead end, I just yeah. you know and it just pitters out. I just go well, and then I start the next thing. You know, there's nothing. You know, I because so many of the shows in LA too aren't like really. Like a professionally shows. They're just, they're at bars and they're laid back.
I don't think you have to justify it at all. I think as long as you, I mean, ultimately, I think the crowd is, they're there to sort of be led a little
bit.
Right. I mean, like you're forming a relationship with them, but they want to follow you. Like that's why they're there. So if you don't, I feel like if you don't go, screech, you know, and like if something doesn't play, I think if you just kind of gloss over it and jump onto something else, they're not gonna.
I don't care.
I don't think they'll really care if you don't. If you don't land on it for
but
too long.
You can get some laughs to get out of the situation by commenting on that moment. Like I, like it's sometimes at the improv, like that the kind of crowd that like will like if you take it one step too far, they'll step back. You comment that they took a step back. They, you get a laugh, and then you just move on from
there. Right.
I know, and I do love that. I love that when somebody just says what is happening. You know, because I think I have a hard time. Say, I don't know if that's because of culturally how I grew up. It's like let's not mention what's going on.
The danger, though, is always that if because in your mind. You're not always the best judge of
what's
how your materials
happening.
Like how people sometimes you think people don't like you and sometimes it's they're listening or they're trying to hear.
Yes.
And so then when you go into well, this was a big pile of failure, then everyone is just kind of like, "Oh, I you
was
wasn't
like
really feeling that." And then you're telling them that it sucked and then they're like, "Oh, not I mean, but I totally hear you about the honesty thing.
I like getting up on stage and like commenting on the room right away because it kind of brings everyone into the now of the show.
I like that, and I always feel like, oh, this person's really here. Like they're not just phoning it in, going, I'm going to recite to you, which is something. Like, okay, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try it today.
Try
it. I'm at Tykes.
Tykes.
Tay.
It's Tay, I believe.
I'm not French. French toast. French toast. 8:30 p.m.
Really?
French Toast at Sunday Nights, is that, that's what it's called, that show.
I didn't know there was a show there.
Do they serve French toast?
I don't know. Is that from
Or is it a French toast? Like, do your elf!
The last week they had like Kyle and Bronger on it or something like that.
Okay.
I heard it's good.
Kyle Kinane, Matt Bronger.
Yeah, sorry.
Just for people listening.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, they're very gifted and talented as well.
You earlier you said, "Oh, I feel like I have everything I need."
Yeah.
Do you have sort of long term? I mean, it's baffling to me that you're not on a show. Like you would be such a perfect character on a show. Like you, like I'm surprised that you're not on something right now.
Well, that's what I keep telling the Lord Jesus Christ, and it's good that He's on my side because He has a plan for sure.
I'm going to let you do some. I want you to do some road work. And then we're going to slide you into a sitcom.
That's the best Jesus Christ voice.
That's how it sounds, right? That's what he talks like.
Maria, take it from me.
Wilfred Brimley.
Oh, Jesus, you've gained weight.
I also have diabetes.
Diabetes.
They deliver him a diabetes medication. Lord Jesus Christ.
When you only saw one footsteps in the in the sand, it's because I took a break on a rock.
Well, that's because my foot was sawed off because I got diabetes.
You were carrying me because I got real tired. I was riding you like a. there's the equivalent of footprints in the sand in other religions. Did you know that? Like, there's one about. I can't remember this Hindu or Buddhism where it's like there is the statue that's dirty of Buddha in the corner in the center square, and then somebody rubbed next to it and it was gold. There's
the center square, you
like
mean,
or wherever you know the village
where Paul Lind used to sit.
And then somebody rubs up against it and it's actually solid gold. And the thing is like, oh, you don't notice what's a treasure beneath you or something.
Well, all
like
of it, like if you trace back, all the mythologies cross. Over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You mean religions?
Right, I've heard that.
All the religions.
Yeah. Real. You mean the facts?
Right. <Yeah. laughs>
I went to Catholic school. And you mean facts?
They probably won't teach you all of the parallels between the Nativity and the Mithraism.
I don't know what you're.
All right.
You mean when the baby Jesus was born?
Yes, yes, Matt. When the baby Jesus was born. I don't know.
Presents.
Wow, I've never seen a
at a time of the year when there weren't shepherds out.
And the day Matthew's born.
Why don't you crash into Jesus?
I'm Boston, and I believe in Jesus Christ and Dave Matthews.
And the Red Sox as well.
Can I pitch you guys my show that I would like to do?
Go.
Please.
Okay.
Get your checkbooks out.
Okay, so what's happening? I'd like to do it. Okay, so... But I don't really know what it would look like because I want to collaborate with somebody, and I was trying to get, do you know Neil, who's married to Jen Kirkman?
Neil Mahoney.
Mahoney, yes. Who's a delight.
Now, Maria, I am a network executive, and as such, I lack a lot of imagination that most humans possess, so you're really going to have to paint the picture for me.
Well, I actually paint a picture. That's what I do for the show.
Well, I can see that.
It's called Ross, the girl.
Wait, there's no orange in this painting, are you? I hate orange. I will never pick up a show with orange in it.
It's whatever you want it to be. It's a modern art piece. I don't like that. Okay, so the... Okay, maybe I should... But okay. So the idea is it's a neighborhood... sitcom where I live with the same, you know, people, sort of a cavalcade of characters or whatever that are in my head. But there's only one person that in the series that acknowledges it, that who's my roommate, that I'm actually not living in the sitcom. And one of the characters is a monster who is, so it's called Me, My Mom, and a Monster. And, the monster lives in the garage, and then each episode the monster is something else to everybody. Like the monster, you know, represents, you know, whatever, like racism or the environment or some huge, you know, it's whatever people put on it.
Is the monster a physical character in the show?
Yeah, and I play the monster as well. And then the monster is whatever you think it is, but it's, you know, I'm playing it, and it's always in the dark. And it's kind of like a Doogie Howser moment where it's like it's my diary where I talk to the monster, and the monster doesn't say anything for the most part, you know, just gurgles and spits and stuff like that. And different characters. It's sort of like the Ray Bevers show, but I was thinking with outside characters coming in, yeah. Who. So not all of them acknowledged. Only one person acknowledges that it's in my head, but everybody else is on board. It's like, hey, how's your mom? And I'm like, well, she said, you know, like. Yeah.
So is it sort of United States of Tara?
Yeah, but no. I don't want to say United States of Terrible.
Right.
But I don't want any mental illness or like there's something wrong. You know, it's just like that. It's something I do on Sunday nights. You know. But when I'm at home.
I wish I had a pile of money to just give you a show. I would love for you to... Can you just go shoot some stuff?
Yeah, I think this is what I was going to do. I was going to try to meet with Neil Mahoney for lunch. I was going to take him out for lunch, and then I said, hey, if I give you $1,000, you know, would you shoot this one thing, maybe, and add your creative content? Neil, are you listening?
If Neil does not shoot your show, I guarantee you that... We could find someone to shoot your show.
Okay. I think it's a good choice, though.
I'm saying he might be if he's busy. Like if he's working on something and he doesn't have any free time, I would produce your show for you.
Well,
I would just give you
Captain Free Time. Just talking.
Yes,
I would just give you. Well, I'm a producer. I don't have to go there. I just throw money at it. I just go, here's your money. Yeah. Just go make a thing and give it back to me when you're done.
Well, in that case, I have a lot of ideas. One gets just called Fudge Shop. And I just go and visit a fudge shop. And each day they have a new flavor of fudge.
Do you need a fat sidekick?
Yes, I do.
Good, because I'll wear a fat suit. Sorry.
Crash into magic.
That turned evil.
Jennifer McLean and I were thinking of doing it. We're obsessed with this idea of just doing a show where it's just it's an hour long and it's a series and it's just called Fancy Farts. It's just situations, people, whatever that you might perceive as fancy. And then at some point during the hour, there's a big.
I can see the title card now. It kind of like has the animation of Mad Men, but it's like someone farting, and then like it kind of a mist comes out of their butt and goes into calligraphy.
Mike Furman used to record all of his farts onto a micro cassette recorder, or no, like just on the hit of some digital recorder. And so what we started doing was we started naming them. Because they all had different personalities. So like, if you looked under the Who Me, you'd hear, and they were all his actual farts. They were all his actual parts. So it was actually a fun exercise to go through and kind of anthropomorphize them. Oh, we had so much fun. Maria, I'm gonna launch Nerdist.tv. I'm gonna launch
Nerdist.tv.
I'm gonna produce your show, and then we're gonna sell it because you need to be on television.
Okay, I will do because all I need to do is get Nia Mahoney, and then I'll start writing it right now. I mean, I already wrote one episode, but so I'll get you the script, and then I always try to do things with nothing. Because, I mean, you could just use your imagination, right? Who needs props when you got fingers?
That's right.
And then,
that sounds like an old vaudeville maxim.
Who needs props when you got fingers?
Yeah.
It's like I read that in the Groucho book.
Yeah.
All these kids today with their amplification and their lights.
All you needed was yelling and fingers.
Yeah.
Then we were making $32 a year.
Yes, the big time.
Instead of talking to people, we just poke them.
Even our rats had rats.
Okay, oh my god, that is so delightful. This is all happening, you guys.
Yeah,
it's happening so fast.
We're going to make it happen. You're a superstar, Marie. You need to be goddamn fucking...
Okay.
Jeez. We make dreams happen on this podcast.
Yeah, this is really exciting.
Not our dreams. None of our dreams happen.
Okay, wait a minute. Well, yeah, but you guys want to be in the show? Because I need to have people in the show.
Yeah, I already said I put on a fat suit.
Okay,
I'll be fat neighbor Matt Myra.
I will stand on an apple box behind furniture, and I'll be Jonah.
Oh, great! Oh, yeah.
No, I don't believe that. I'll be me too. I'll be you as well. I'll be the crazy cow.
You just threw Matt Myra under the truck. Like, that's real hard.
That's what he does.
Gonna be stepping on each other's jokes. He's gonna turn into Will and Grace all of a sudden. Joe's gonna be the Deborah Messing.
Oh, that's okay.
Ouch.
I'm gonna be
Harry Connick Jr.
Have you ever had your dog ask if it needs representation? Have you ever had that happen?
Someone ask you if
your dog... Yeah, no, not my dog. I went to like a dog thing, a dog event, and then there was this dog agent there. And of course, I was trying to sell hard. Awesome. I was putting her on the
stock
block. And two pugs, but apparently she was too old.
Oh, does that sound familiar?
and then they saw my friend's dog who was not interested in a show business at all. A mutt, a terrier, and they were totally interested in that dog. I don't know.
That's how it happens. That's how Milhouse got Fallout Boy. That's how Milhouse got the role of Fallout Boy.
That's right.
He didn't want to be Fallout Boy.
He wanted to be Fallout Boy.
And they gave him the role anyway.
It's when you don't want it that's when you get it.
It's when you're a dog who doesn't have any understanding of human construct in Hollywood.
You can tell when they want it, though.
Yeah.
You're going to puffing out their asshole a little extra hard with their tail curled up over. You know.
They know what they're doing.
That's always feel about relationships. That relationships just feels like Hollywood where, is the dog okay?
Scott really wants in.
Oh, he's barking.
On Hollywood.
Scott's barking.
He wants in on Hollywood.
Well, you can see the Hollywood sign from my yard. Scott barks at the Hollywood sign sometimes. Like, what did I do? What do you need from me?
And then he jumped off like that guy from Family Affairs Mom.
Yeah, exactly. Just like that guy. Benford, where are on the internet? Now, there has been a huge call to get you on Twitter, but I feel like you're going to be unswayable in this matter.
I just don't know what I would say. What would I, I would say, I know I could write funny things, right? But then the problem is then I know a lot of people are writing very funny things, and I got a right to work on them to... But maybe I'm falling behind in the loop.
No one has your point of view. You know, you shouldn't be on Twitter if you feel like it's a chore.
Yeah.
But I know that a lot of fans would love for you to be on there because people
adore you. If anything,
to
announce shows, you start off that way. And then ease your way into the, the jokes.
Well, let me put this out. I'm going to start whispering what I'm doing in the moment at all times. And if people want to start following me... And that's cool.
Like literally following
me. Literally following me. Right now, I'm at Chris Hardwick's house.
Maria has 5,000 followers. Hello! And a big crowd of people at all times.
That would actually be comforting.
It's like those Verizon commercials where they're all...
Exactly.
Like, Chris, can you make this happen? A comedy bus where every night where there's a show, like people kind of network to do ride share and go to comedy shows together, like comedians where it's like, oh, you have a set at Big Fish and that other shitty place. Let's get together.
Comedy carpool?
Yeah, comedy carpool.
Comedy carpools.
I like that idea.
So we're taking the audience around or taking the comics around?
No, just the comics.
Oh, I thought you were talking about a bus service.
Oh,
okay, here's where I went with that.
No.
All right, it's a transportation service where you put a comic on it and he entertains people who are being picked up from bars so they don't have to drive home.
This is for comics by comics. FC.
Yeah, but then you gotta hang out with
Kipbook. But you are Maria. You do have MariaBamford.com, right?
Yeah, and you can download a free 1-hour comedy special that I made for last Christmas, shot by Neil Mahoney, which features my two pugs with no laugh track, which has like an hour of relatively not all new material stuff. But if people just want to visualize things, that's for free. You can shred it, put it on a thing, dice it, whatever you need to do. It's free. It's yours. And that's what I'm selling.
That's great. And then what I'm kind of launching a website, and the whole purpose of it is this thing called nerd sourcing, where we crowdsource with nerds. And so if you have a project, like you want to shoot this thing.
Yes.
My hope is that we can get a bunch of fun, creative nerds together that will come help get it done for you. And then you get your thing out of it, and they get to work with you, and they get to put on their resume, like, oh, I made this thing with Maria Bamford, and everyone gets something out of it.
That's great, but no, and then the only worry is, like, I just go, you know, sometimes people are frightening, you know, like, even though they're nice, they can be, you know, I don't know, have you ever...
We don't shoot it at your house.
Oh, God! Because that's where I always think, well, it's got to be my house.
No, we'll shoot it at a location. Like,
okay,
We'll take you to the location, like, we won't... Yeah, we're not gonna.
We'll blindfold everyone on the way there.
That's right. We'll hold on that Men in Black thing and be like, yes. This was a weather balloon. And then everyone will think that it was just a weather balloon.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. I mean, not that I'm generally afraid of people. I've just had a couple of weird experiences now.
Well, I definitely think it's harder if you're a lady comic and you can kind of get some aggressive dudes who are like, I want to make you my bride.
Yeah, I saw you. 1992, and I've been thinking about this. I just want some of your time.
I've had a boner for 15 years straight.
It's embarrassing.
Oh, and I don't even know. I mean, I think, I don't know. And it was weird, though, because I think I would never do that. Like, I would never go, I saw that guy. You know, he's playing concert violin on TV. And I just like the looks of him, the shape and the width. And I just feel like we might have something in common. I just want to just have an ear for just a couple of minutes of his time. Like, I would never do that. You know,
if I meet him, I know we're going to be BFFs.
Yeah, I think I would never do... I mean, have you ever done that? Have you ever met somebody who would go, oh, I saw them in some public situation, and now I'm going to go ask him for something, or...
No, I don't think I've done that.
William Catt, the greatest American hero.
I did ask Emo Phillips for advice when I was 21. And he said, you just keep doing it, and then you keep doing it, and pretty soon a lot of people have seen you, and then more people have seen you, and then pretty soon a whole bunch of people have seen you. Right. And it's actually
right before I started doing comedy, I was at the Improv. I saw Brian Posehn do a set, and like I said, hey, I just want to say, like, I'm a really big fan. I think you're a great stand-up, and I'm really big fan of Mr. Show. Then he talked to me for 45 minutes, giving me advice, like, because he's like, you thinking about going into stand-up?
I don't know who's in my house. This is our first surprise guest.
Did you bring all your friends?
I might have.
Someone
going to
be selling something.
My friends.
I'm recording a show.
Yeah.
This is an awkward moment. Let's cover it by saying how awkward it is.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. It's
just be.
Well,
just be.
I'm not okay.
Just be. Do we sing something to calm ourselves down?
Do we crash into me? And one, and a two, and a three, and I've never heard the song really to know it.
Crash.
Here, I'll just play it for everybody.
I know that Whitney Houston song.
Can't clear that, man.
What? No, it's fine. Dave and I have a long-standing agreement where I just give him lots of money.
I wonder if I have that.
I have six versions of it on my phone.
You have six versions of Crash Into Me?
So, let's
acoustic?
Acoustic I have,
oh,
sure.
I love it. I love Dave Matthews' band. He's very kindly.
That's a sweet song. That's a sweet song.
Oh, they can hear it.
I hope.
We speak
a lot
too.
Wait,
this is the first time we played it, so no one clapped for it.
Wait, why? Are we gonna be able to have this on our show?
We're not advertising.
Got your
I was totally just rude to my new neighbor.
Oh.
He's a young looking guy, and I open the door and I'm like, whatever this is, I'm recording a thing, so I don't have any time. Because we get a lot of solicitations. Like, sure. People show up and they're like, you want magazine subscriptions? And I'm like, no. And then they make you feel like you don't want to help their youth group.
Yes. Yeah.
And then you always hear like, oh, it's a scam. Don't give it to them because they have to give that money to someone else who's like their Don and he takes all the shit from them and then they punches him in the throat. So I totally was just super short to the guy. And then he was like, oh, I just moved next door. And then, of course, and then that's when I got on a large penny farthing bike to backpedal.
Oh.
Turned out to be a very sweet guy.
We just crashed into me while you were gone.
Did you really?
Well, kind of.
I never left the podcast unattended before. How did it go for these 2 minutes?
It went horrible.
It was just fine.
Chris, we need you.
Yeah, it turns out we need you.
Good, that's what I need to hear. That's what I need to hear. That's what my alpha male needs to hear.
This is my new... No, this is just a open mic show I want to do in my neighborhood. Anybody interested? Do you know... Because I've tried to ask, like, a bunch of places, will they let me do an open mic in my neighborhood? And I was going to do the bowling alley. I'm hoping that I'm going to go there.
Oh, yeah, because they got that stage at All Star Lanes. Okay.
You saw Ben Folds there.
I saw Ben Folds there when I first moved to L.A. I saw him perform, and then Weird Al came up on stage and sang a Ben Folds 5 song with him. One of the best moments of my life.
That is a delightful moment.
A song for the Dumped. Yeah, it was great. But, like, that's a cool place.
Is it cool? Okay, maybe I'll do that. Okay.
But then there's also Juanita's down New York, more towards Garbanzo.
And I thought because they had such a high ceiling, like, it might not be so good. Like, it seems
that's
like
true.
A giant
Benford, I have a little experience with bowling centers. It's going to be very loud.
Okay.
No, it's a bar off the side. It's like it has a wall. You have to walk through a door to get into
it. I'm listening.
And an open bar so people can have nice beverages.
And they got is it still a Chinese restaurant attached to it, or did they change that again?
I don't know. I haven't been there, but I got turned down by a couple places. I'm like, what? You don't want live comedy?
What else did you try? The coffee table lounge?
I did not try the coffee table lounge.
I don't think it's set up right for it.
I tried a couple coffee shops. Yeah.
All-Star Lanes is going to be good. I think that'll be good.
It's a great bowling alley, too.
And then in between comics, we have a sing-along of popular tunes. Like, I'll hand out the lyrics to some of our popular, some slow dance.
Like Lollipop and...
Yeah. Yeah, and then people do a sing-along.
Mr. Sandman.
Because Jackie Cation likes to sing-along, and I was trying to think of a way I could get her to co-host it.
That's fun. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Maria Bamford's Sing-Along Comedy Hour.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That sounds like a blast.
Okay.
All-Star Lanes is also the name of my dad's bowling center in Memphis,
Tennessee. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's information that's useful to know.
When do we get your dad on the podcast?
When do we go to that bowling alley?
My dad... We'd have to go to Florida.
Okay.
But you can't just do it via the telephone. It's even bold.
No, stuff over the telephone is weird.
I know, I'm into this.
Everyone tries to talk at once, and you can't see their face, so you don't know when they're going to start, and then it's just a big clusterfuck.
Yeah. So I can.
And I already get accused of interrupting people enough as it is.
Fuck.
Like, for instance. Bamford, it has been wonderful having
you
on. I'm so glad. I'm sorry it didn't happen sooner.
No, cheers.
Cheers.
Clink, clink, clink.
Hugs for everyone.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.
For more than two centuries, the White House has been the stage for some of the most dramatic scenes in American history. Inspired by the hit podcast American History Tellers, Wondery and William Morrow present the new book, The Hidden History of the White House. Each chapter will bring you inside the fierce power struggles, the world-altering decisions, and shocking scandals that have shaped our nation. You'll be there when the very foundations of the White House are laid in 1792, and you'll watch as the British burn it down in 1814. Then you'll hear the intimate conversations between FDR and Winston Churchill as they make plans to defeat Nazi forces in 1941. And you'll be in the Situation Room when President Barack Obama approves the raid to bring down the most infamous terrorist in American history. Pre-order The Hidden History of the White House now in hardcover or digital editions wherever you get your books.